Hey there, freaks. Welcome back to Rabbit Hole Recap with Marty and Matt Odell.
How's it going, guys?
I'm surviving. I'm doing okay, Matt. A lot of drama, a lot of volatility. Volatility is back. We'll get to it. Today is Monday, November 19th, 2018. Day that'll go down in infamy for some people, I'm sure. Before we jump into the topics of the day, this podcast was brought to you by the Cash App, our favorite app. Our favorite app to buy Bitcoin. You already know the Cash App is the number one finance app in the App Store. You've heard the spiel many times. If you've been listening to this podcast, you know about the Boost program. The Boost program is something that I have been taking advantage of, a lot of advantage of, actually. I use it almost every day. Basically, what you do is you order the free cash card after you download the Cash App, and you get Boost, which get you discounts at certain retailers. They just added Taco Bell to the list last week. The retailers include Whole Foods, Chipotle, Domino's. Like I said, Taco Bell's now on the roster. Te quieres Taco Bell? Get the cash card, and you can get a little discount there. And then the coffee shops as well. It's my favorite one. The cash card puts you in control of your money with an extra in-app safety feature that lets you pause your card with a touch. Unlike a credit card, there are no fees ever, and the credit check isn't required to get one. We're not using the other apps anymore. Don't even know their names. Visit the App Store, Google Play, Marketplace, and download the Cash App now. And tell them we sent you. We're big fans of them and their Bitcoin buying capabilities.
Best way to buy Bitcoin right now for a U.S. person.
Yeah, their ACH setup is impeccable. The money comes from your bank account to the app, and you can buy Bitcoin right away and then send it out of the app as quickly as possible. You can buy Bitcoin and have it in a personal wallet within 5 minutes, depending on what the congestion's like on the network. Matt, we're sitting large at 48.90 right now on Bitstamp, our favorite exchange. Been a bit chaotic. I believe last week we were still at 6,000 only 5 days ago. Where was it? Were we in 5,000 range? No.
We were like 6,300 two episodes ago, right?
Two episodes ago. We're talking about 5 days ago. We were 6 days ago when we dropped it on Wednesday.
We hadn't even broken 6K yet?
I don't think so. I don't believe so. I have to go back. We have to run the tape back.
I think we had just broken 6K.
Yeah. Seems like there's some capitulation in the air. Some more. A lot of people freaking out.
Well, maybe it was the day after we dropped. We broke 6K.
Yeah.
Because we dropped on Wednesday and the Bcash fork hadn't happened yet, right?
Yeah, it was the day before.
And the narrative needed the Bcash fork to be blamed for the price drop, even though it was completely unrelated.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The volatility was at all-time lows. Like we were talking, I think we practically called it. We're like, volatility is at all-time.
Yeah, it was
something
due.
About the break. What's interesting is global markets are suffering as well. The traditional stock market's been on.
Yeah, they're getting hammered today. NASDAQ was down a whole 3%.
Yeah, it was, but maybe Bitcoin is playing into a larger global macro play here, and people are
a risk-off scenario.
Risk-off, yeah, which may be more likely. And then the SEC announcement from last week, I actually think would have more.
That could have been insider trading too before that announcement.
That as well. And I think that would have a bigger impact than the Bitcoin Cash.
That's what Preston Byrne kind of called. He was like, yeah. Someone asked him, I think Breaker Magazine asked him, which was funded by an ICO, by the way. Breaker Magazine asked him what they thought the reason for the price fall was before the SEC news came out. And he said it's probably some insider information leaking before
people reshuffling the deck chairs on the Titanic before the SEC hammer came down. I guess that'll be our first topic outside of prices. The SEC came out, for you freaks that don't know, last week, and it seems as though they went after two ICOs in particular. Paragon, what was that, like a weed token?
They had a lot of celebrities, right?
I'm pretty sure that was the one Paris Hilton was on. And I think Money Mayweather might have been on that as well. And then AirSwap was the other one.
It wasn't AirSwap. It was AirFox.
AirFox. Excuse me. AirFox, not AirSwap.
Which is also another token.
Yeah. Here in Brooklyn, I believe. But what we are learning from this enforcement action from the SEC is it seems as though they have structured sort of copy and paste format for coming after these ICOs. They can sort of play Mad Libs with the different ICO founders and names and sort of start going after everybody. So,
I mean, the big thing I think was, aren't they making them refund the tokens?
Yes, or the is it the U.S. dollar value
at time of sale?
At time of sale.
I'm not sure. I haven't really looked into it that much. Everyone was freaking out about it, but I just expected the SEC to crack down on all this shit. So
yeah, I'm very, very much the same way. Again, I think it's short-term noise, but it was bound to happen. We've been talking about it. Like,
but if they have to liquidate their treasury holdings, which is usually both Ethereum and Bitcoin, but mostly Ethereum, like that could have a major effect on the price.
Yeah, the Ethereum price, that's it's approaching some very, very crucial levels for the Maker DAI in particular.
Well, people, they keep padding there.
Yeah, so let me pull up the site. But Ether is trading around $150 on a Gemini right now.
Yeah, Ethereum's down about 14% today, and Bitcoin's down 11.3%. So Ethereum fell a little bit more than Bitcoin.
Yeah, I'm looking for the site that tracks the MakerDAI.
Bloody, bloody day, man.
Well, it was bound to happen, right? Or
while Marty is looking for that, just wanted to let you freaks know that I bought him a nice new tumbler to replace the one that you might have heard me break last episode.
Thank you for that.
He's currently drinking out of it right now. The bottle we're consuming today is Monkey Shoulder, and it was actually a gift from one of our listeners at Upstream Host. So give him a follow. He seems like a good dude. Bought us a bottle.
Thanks for that, bro. It's very tasty. Enjoying it a lot. All right, I'm on the site here. Have you been on the site? You know how to navigate this? All right, here we go. Yeah, so the next big liquidation is at about $142.45 right now. They'll have to sell off. It's going to jump from, they'll have to sell off about 7 million Ether if the price gets to that level, just to keep the peg.
Because it's collateralized.
Yes,
it's collateralized with Ethereum. So once it falls to a certain point, they have to sell the Ether to compensate for the shortfall.
Yeah. So that's another thing to watch out. Again, this is I don't want to seem too harsh here, but the type of capitulation we probably needed to see. There needs to be a cleansing of all the bad actors, and basically people have to be punished for making stupid economic market decisions.
I think it's a little bit wishful thinking to think that the bad actors will all be flushed out, but a lot of them will be.
No, but there'll be this happening will cause people to pause going forward and
I mean, this
think
has
twice
happened,
about
what, two, three other times already?
Yeah, and obviously, yeah, there's new scammers and new scams every cycle, but like it is like the tide coming, and like there more and more people get a hardened defense against these types of scams going forward.
Oh, sure, I agree. I mean, every time you get scammed, you learn
exactly
as well.
Yeah,
as far as bottoms, you need like full despair. If it's going to be anything like the previous one, which is the only one me and you have lived through, and I've talked to people who have lived through the 2011 one, and, you know, you need to be, it needs to be like Bitcoin is over, and I just fucking wasted all this time for the majority of people in the market.
Yeah, we're not there yet, but at Candle Hater on Twitter has a nice thread going around looking for people capitulating in tweets. I'm out. Fuck this crypto bullshit. I'm done. I'm not wasting any more time here. Fuck crypto Twitter. Fuck Bitcoin. Fuck Matthew McConaughey. Call a capitulation. I don't care. Goodbye.
Fuck Matthew McConaughey. I like Matthew McConaughey.
Crypto Panini.
All right, all right, all right.
Crypto Panini gone. One down. One more. Goddle member. At Goddle member. I'm capitulating. Fuck you all. I lost a lot of money. Fuck crypto. Worst year of my life. Keep gambling, fuckwits. I lost $7,000. Fucked a lot of you. I hate crypto, and I hope you all commit suicide.
Wow.
Goddle member.
That's fucked up.
It's a bit harsh, man.
That's really fucked up.
All right, we'll go one more. We'll go one more.
Don't commit suicide.
Ethereum West, parentheses, not a security, at Ethereum West on Twitter. I'm out of crypto. Probably won't trade again until the manipulation stops. Tired of the bad actors in the space. I wouldn't be surprised if we see $100 Bitcoin. It's a scam to buy right now. So those are just a few capitulation tweets.
I would buy all of the Bitcoin at $100, man.
I don't know. I don't think it'll ever get to $100. Again.
That'd be a fucking mess. I mean, I'm glad that we brought Murad on.
Right?
Right? When did we brought Murad on. He basically, this is his scenario that he played out for you guys. What was it, four episodes ago?
This is why we brought him on. Let me, we brought him on October 8th.
You guys knew this was a scenario, a likely scenario that could play out here.
Yeah.
So stick to the plan. That's like...
Well, we're not giving you financial advice. It's just like we're observing the market actions as they progress through time. And today was this weekend was particularly exciting, but I don't want to say exciting. But definitely...
Well, it's more exciting when the volatility goes upwards.
Yeah, invigorating, I would say. I feel alive for the first time in a while in this space, you know. There's a few boring months there over the summer.
Yeah, but the problem is so now we have this heavy-ass drop. We're going to have that same period. When this all settles out, we're going to have that same period of 3 months, but we're going to be doing it, like, a lot poorer.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would argue that we're definitely not through the worst of it yet, but
well, the key is what, like, did you see that Bloomberg just donated $1.8 billion to what, John Hopkins, his alma mater?
I did not see that.
For scholarships? Like, imagine if you put a fraction of that into Bitcoin. That's what we need to turn around the bear market.
Yeah.
Bloomberg just needs to announce, you know, $400 million market buy.
I'll get on it. I'll email them.
Someone's got to tweet at him. Tweet at Mike.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's all we'll say about the current market conditions. We try not to focus on price too much here. Let's get back to why we're in this in the first place. And there's always reminders in the news. And last week, we got a very stark reminder of why Bitcoin exists. A couple of gold sellers in Iran were executed by the Iranian government. The Iranian government accused them of cornering the gold market and manipulating prices.
They called them hoarders.
Yeah, called them hoarders. But if you look into it, it seems as though they were running a legitimate business and were being very beneficial market players by creating the service that they did, where people could buy gold in a country whose currency is hyperinflating due to the fact that they're being sanctioned by the rest of the world. So these two were executed. Executed, and I think it just, I wrote about it in the Bent last week, and I think it's just a story that should highlight why we're in this. Bitcoin provides a non-physical bearer asset that people in countries like Iran need to preserve their wealth and self-sovereignty, and the physical nature of gold makes it so that these government agents could basically see that they were selling gold and step in. I mean,
yeah, you still might have gotten caught executed, but they might not have actually gotten all the funds.
It would have been harder. Couldn't.
At least they wouldn't have had the incentive of being able to steal all this money too at the same time.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, they might have by torturing him or whatever, but you never know. Maybe he only gives up one password, or he gives up another password or something. You never really know if you get it all.
Yeah.
With gold, you just walk into the room and it's just all sitting there.
Yeah, exactly.
And the word hoarders just really triggers me. Like, they used that a lot in the last bear market.
Why does it trigger you?
To deride Bitcoin savers. Because I think that over the years we've been sold like this false narrative that, you know, you should spend, you know, you shouldn't save your money. And I don't think that we should deride people who want to store their wealth for their children. And I think that also, so that's where like the hoarders element comes in. And then they also shame hodlers. And I think, you know, if you dollar cost average and you, you know, hold long term, that that's the more conservative play than trying to time short term moves in like a highly volatile market. So like, that's ridiculous. You know, it's easy to say like, oh, like you should have sold higher. Right. But like when it all levels out, 99% of people are going to be way better off dollar cost averaging and hodling.
Yeah. I mean, it's a strategy for wealth preservation over time, and you can't deride people for wanting to save some money over time. You know, you don't, not even saving money to hand over to their kids, just if they want to buy a house or something.
But I think the hoarding narrative is going to become more of an issue as we go forward.
Well, that's interesting. That's a good segue. This wasn't even on the topics list, but what I talked about in the bend today is coming more and more to the realization that Bitcoin's biggest attack surface might be misinformation. And it's tough. The mainstream media, there's a lot of uninformed informers in the mainstream media who are the loudest and have the biggest audiences and are putting bad information in people's minds. And that's why we do this podcast and why I write the newsletter, is to actively battle that misinformation and try to put good information out there. But like you said,
I think Bitcoin is highly resistant to that type of attack. I think who's more affected are, you know, the people who could miss out on possibly the greatest investment opportunity, you know, the greatest wealth transfer event of their lives. Because they could get fooled into, oh, it's Beanie Babies, or, oh, it's going to boil the oceans. But like, Bitcoin doesn't care if an article comes out in The Economist that says that Bitcoin's going to boil the oceans. Like, that doesn't fucking do anything to Bitcoin.
But there's examples of misinformation leading to bad policy, like in Quebec, for instance.
Oh, sure. I agree with that. Right. But then it comes down to, so you're fucking, that line of reasoning is fucking over the citizens of Quebec, right? So it's still screwing over specific end users or specific people, individuals, groups, rather than Bitcoin. Because then, you know, so then there's no Bitcoin mining in Quebec, so it happens somewhere else.
That's true. Yeah. But,
or like the Bit license, for instance, right? Like that fucked over New York. That didn't fuck over Bitcoin. Bitcoin said, fuck you to it.
Yeah, that's true. It's a good point. Very good point. But I do think it is advantageous for us to get out in front and try to.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Ledger and Trezor issues. I did not do much research on this before hopping on the mic, but is this about the BTC Pay server?
Right. So
XPub thing?
So Ledger first. The first issue arose earlier this week with Ledger, which was a privacy issue, where if your Ledger is unlocked and your Bitcoin app is open on the Ledger, then any application on your computer or presumably any web page you visit can pull your XPub keys. Which gives them all your addresses and future addresses. So basically your privacy is completely compromised. They can't steal your coins or anything. It can make you a bigger target because like someone might know you have coins.
Yeah.
And how much you have. But on a pure basis, it's privacy, not security. And Ledger has a fix coming out in their next update, they said.
Yeah, I thought Trezor said they were immune from this issue, though.
Yeah, they've been going back and forth. The key is, I'm pretty sure the Trezor gives you a prompt. The way to mitigate this kind of issue, you should just assume that if you plug a hardware wallet into a computer that's connected to the internet, you could end up leaking privacy, right? So, like, you don't have to worry as much about security, but you should assume that you could be leaking, you know, wallet balances and stuff like that. And the easiest way for them to mitigate this is that it prompts you on the screen of the device. Mm-hmm. Do you want whatever website to see your keys? And it doesn't prompt you on Ledger. The update's going to prompt you.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure it prompts you on Trezor. And then on Cold Card, you can do it without connecting to a computer because they have an SD card. So then you don't even have to worry about it because it's just muling the signed transaction over.
I need to mess around with the cold card. I haven't done that yet.
Yeah, I have two. I can let you fuck around with one.
Thanks. How's fucking around with the Casa node been?
I'm still syncing.
Okay. Yeah, Jeremy, I spoke with, you freaks will hear this interview tomorrow. I spoke with Jeremy Welch yesterday, and he answered your questions very thoroughly.
Awesome. I'm excited.
Yeah. He answered those towards the end of the podcast, so definitely listen towards the end to hear some important security and privacy questions answered in regards to the Casa node. But
let's go back to Ledger Trezor,
okay,
real quick, and then we can go back to all these new sexy hardware nodes we have. So we have that with the Ledger. So you have a potential privacy leak. So if the way attack like this would look is if you had, you know, like an app on your computer that was a bad app, or even we haven't seen actual proof of concept, and we probably won't see one before the fix comes out anyway. But like the idea would be like you embed something in a Bitcoin payment screen because you know they're going to unlock their Ledger on that web page to pay the invoice.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be more likely to leak their keys.
Okay.
And then you also have all these other privacy things like, oh, if you're using the Ledger software or you're using the Trezor software, are they leaking keys there and stuff? You know, so whenever you're connecting these things to internet devices, you should assume there's some kind of privacy risk. Then with Trezor today, they released a blog post. Did you see this about the knockoffs?
Oh, I did not
and
see
this. The boxes look the same. The devices look the same. But they're not legitimate devices. And right now, they don't think that they're being used for malicious reasons. It's literally just the usual Chinese play of knocking it off and offering it for cheaper. But the same idea could be used to give you a malicious device where they could steal your keys, right? And steal access to your funds.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, so you should read the blog post to see like how sophisticated some of these fakes are.
That's one thing, especially when you're first opening your Trezor, the box, the sticker is probably the most important part, right?
But so the sticker is like a limited, you should look at it, and like they put another sticker on the bottom of the Trezor too, of the new one where the hole is, and like you should examine it, but it offers you limited benefit because someone could get their hands on more stickers, right, and try and put it down. So that's why they have like a lot of residue on them. So this happens because you bought it on Amazon or somewhere and you got a knockoff instead.
I always tell people just to buy on the website, even if it's more expensive.
So you
want to
buy on the website first off, right? And now when you buy on the website, if you give them your home address, all of a sudden you're on a company's list that sells Bitcoin storage devices with your home address. So like it'd be best if you use like a Dropbox location, like a UPS store or something like that to ship to. And then if you bought it with cryptocurrency, if you bought it with Bitcoin or other cryptocurrency, that if they support another crypto, whatever, instead of credit card, because with credit card, then you end up on a list where like your name bought that, right? I mean, with me and you, we're like kind of public already, but like there's no reason to telegraph and get on lists if you own Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And then the other thing to note is that this type of attack could also happen if your shipping gets intercepted. So you could order from Trezor, get it shipped to your house or Dropbox or whatever, and then while it's in the post office, like someone could switch it out. And like I guess it'd be more likely for it to happen like over like where's Trezor's Czech Republic, I think?
I believe so, yes.
So like from their distribution center, like that'd be the most likely, right? Like if like a Czech Republic postman was like switching them out.
Yeah.
And so you could have they're called supply chain attacks where they switch out the package mid route.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's scary too. How do you ever know?
Well, so one of the interesting things about this is the Ledger is immune to this to a degree because it has a secure element in it. So when you plug it in, the software checks to make sure that the secure element is legit. I'm like 99% sure that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
That means the Ledger isn't fully open source, which is why people don't like the Ledger.
But is that a trade-off?
It's a trade-off. So it's a different threat model, though,
are
right?
Are you willing to accept that trade-off?
Well, so if you're worried about, like, a state actor, right? If you're worried about, like, a government pressuring Ledger into compromising their wallets, right? Then Ledger might be a worse option than a Trezor, right? But if you're worried about any other threat model besides a state actor, then the Ledger might be more secure. I think, like, at the end of the day, you should be using multiple of these things from different brands, and true cold storage for your real stash. You should be using, you know, true cold storage. And then that way, if any of them get fucked, you know, as if you're a non-technical person, like, that's the best you can do, right? I think, like, you just don't rely on a single device.
Yeah, diversify your risk.
Exactly. Like the Titanic. You got to compartmentalize.
The Titanic's always a good example.
Such a good reference, you right? know. They're coming out. Do you see they're coming out with the second one in like 3 years?
Fuck you, Hollywood.
Become more original. The movie. They're coming out with a replica Titanic ship for cruises, and I think it'd be perfect for the next crypto blockchain cruise, right?
You'll never find me on one of those. I thought they were going to remake Titanic. Well, yeah,
we would never be on a crypto cruise, but that's fucking hilarious. They should put a crypto cruise on.
I thought Hollywood is about to do another remake. I'm sick of...
I mean, if the ship goes down, you can bet your ass they'll come out with a trilogy.
Modern day one. Yeah. Yeah, so for you freaks that don't know, I have a very big gripe with Hollywood and their lack of ingenuity and basically creativity these days. It's all remakes shit, in my opinion. But we didn't come here to talk about movies. We came here to talk about cryptocurrency and... Before we left you freaks last week, Bitcoin Cash was one single chain, and now it is three. Three, correct?
No, it's the original
two?
Died. It's
Did
two.
It die? All right, now it's two.
The original's dead. Now you have Bitcoin Cash ABC and Bitcoin Cash. I always want to say Silicon Valley.
SV. Satoshi's Vision.
Satoshi's Vision.
Yeah. Satoshi's Vision got reorged today.
No, it was just two blocks. It was probably just because they have big blocks and they're just... shitty miners in general.
Yeah.
It was probably just an accident.
Yeah.
Two block reorg isn't that out of the ordinary.
No, but we've got interesting data points in regards to the nature of hash wars and minority forks.
The first and most important thing is that Bitcoin Cash is dead now.
Yes, it is.
We can officially proclaim it a centralized piece of garbage.
I would agree. And... so this is a very nuanced point with the checkpointing in particular. So for those of you that don't know, at some point, I believe it was Thursday or Friday night, the Bitcoin Cash ABC developers, whatever you want to refer to them as,
it's so complicated.
Instituted a checkpoint at the tip of their chain.
At the fork block. Secretly.
Yeah, secretly. So without any, like... consensus with people.
They like passed it out to their miners because Bitcoin.com switched over their Bitcoin hash rate to BCH. They basically 51% attacked the chain at the time of, because they brought on more hash to Bitcoin Cash than total hash was there from Bitcoin over. And in support of Bitcoin Cash ABC, because that's Roger's company. And then at the same time, they were running this slightly altered code that had the checkpoint. And so were the exchanges.
Mm-hmm. The exchanges were too?
Yeah.
Did they know about it?
Yeah.
Really?
It was part of the agreement. It seems it was part of the agreement to deal with the clusterfuck that was Bitcoin Cash.
Who came to the agreement?
You know, because the exchanges are worried, because the exchanges are dealing with crediting user balances and depositing and withdrawing. So... two blocks before the checkpoint, 1 million Bitcoin Cash was sent, right? If that Bitcoin Cash was sent to an exchange and then post-fork got reorged, then that exchange, it just fucks everything for that exchange. So it seems that a couple of the big exchanges, particularly Poloniex, agreed. They wanted the checkpoint protection. They wanted to know that everything before this block was safe. Otherwise, like, you can imagine, like, that's what I said when the Poloniex first released the futures trading, I love fork futures. I think they're a great idea. But with Bitcoin Cash, it's such a shit coin and it's so manipulable. Like, so much shenanigans could happen, which is what we were talking about in the previous episode right before it happened, that they were really opening, as a U.S. regulated exchange that has like Goldman as an investor, like they were really opening themselves up to like complete getting fucked.
Right.
And this was, but we didn't know that they were doing a secret checkpoint in the background and that protected them.
What do you think
about
this?
From the reorg. And it seems like Craig tried to reorg and hit the checkpoint and wasn't able to.
What do you think about this?
Okay, so first disclosure is Satoshi was a fan of checkpoints.
Yes.
In the beginning. But the key is that
there's some nuance here. So this is what we want to get into.
Yeah, nuance.
Because I got caught with my pants down a bit. James O'Byrne, shout out James.
He was the one who showed it to us.
Yeah, shout out James OB for keeping us in check.
That's what I love about Twitter.
Yeah. And
then I found the commit. Like, I was just Googling around for the most recent commit.
So Bitcoin has had checkpoints in the past, but if you go and you go into the commits and you look at the discussion around the checkpoints, it's vastly different.
So the most recent one was 4 years ago, over 4 years ago. It was block 295,000. And the checkpoints were always put in. I mean, I don't agree with checkpoints at all because it's a centralized point of failure. You have a small group deciding on it changes the chain security model. But with these checkpoints, they were farther back in the chain. So like they already had 200, 300 confirms.
Even more than that, I think.
Well, the early ones didn't. But towards the end, like the last one had even more confirms.
Yes.
Right? So you have all these blocks on top of it and they're not really making consensus. But if you do it at the tip of the block and you do it, which is what Bitcoin Cash did, and you do it at the tip of the block during a contentious hard fork, secretly, with like a closed group of like three miners, and like five people in a room decided that this block is the valid block for Bitcoin Cash. At that point, you know, you have a centralized, expensive to use, worthless token. Like, I don't, if it's not decentralized and censorship resistant, then it has no value.
Yeah. It was pretty alarming to see that they would do that. It was just like, how could you do that in that way and not?
Well, they knew they were going to get reorged. Like, Craig caught them with their pants on. They finally got what was coming for them for running a chain that had minority hash rate on an ASIC algo instead of changing their POW. Because then they couldn't pretend it was Bitcoin if they changed the POW. So they were running this risk the whole time. Craig finally caught them with their pants down, and they knew they were going to get reorged. So they had to resort, because this basically shoots themselves in the foot. Like, there's no coming back from this.
Right.
And they still felt it was necessary to do it, which, I mean, that tells you something, right?
Exactly. But I'm going to focus on, the exchanges. Like, I understand that it would be chaotic for them, but should they have that much, should they exert that type of power?
They should just not list it.
Right? Or they should not list it, or just list the two separate chains as different tickers and not worry about it, right?
Well, no. So part of the problem is, right? So it's like,
well, yeah, it could still get reorged.
Pre-BCA, you could reorg it. If you have enough hash, you could reorg it, you know, way back.
Yeah.
I think chains that list these
exchanges
that list these weaker chains, are they open themselves up to huge amounts of liability if they don't take proper precautions, like certain number of block confirms, like extended level.
Yeah, but it also highlights another attack vector of the whole industry at large, which is exchanges. Like, imagine if there was a large reorg, like even of Bitcoin Cash. Now that they chose a winner, it's still a minority fork. It still has minority hash rate. Like, if a big Bitcoin pool decided for some reason to switch their hash rate over to Bcash and reorg it at some point, like, that's still a possibility, and that would fuck up the infrastructure of the exchanges. So that's why we tell people to get your shit off exchanges.
Yeah, that's why you should have very little on exchanges, and if you do have it on multiple, like split up.
But could you imagine? Maybe that's like the first big state attack. Is that's the way they?
Well, the other thing that I don't know if you saw my tweet, but they were someone tweeted out the rich list this weekend.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that. It was Binance's. Binance became the richest. Their
address, yeah. Or richest wallet, because Bitinfo charts combines addresses.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, if you look up the other ones, was like it was all the exchanges, but it was like the sketchy exchanges first, right? The more sketchy exchanges, you know, the ones that don't. Anyway, the point is, if you switch to a proof of stake system, all of a sudden, not only do the exchanges already have all this soft power, but as major token holders, they're also going to have hard power as a form of validators for your network. You know, imagine if the miners were also the exchanges. They were the same, only one entity. Seems just crazy to me.
Right. That's probably the biggest knock on proof of stake is like these exchanges are going to become the quasi gods of these systems.
And people said that this wasn't going to happen. No one would be cool with exchanges doing it or whatever. Like Binance is already doing it. Gate.io is already doing it. Coinbase announced they're going to do it. You know, like the users demand it. The exchanges want to offer it because it's another product line they get to offer. They get to incentivize volume to come in. They get to have more influence over the different networks, right, as validators.
Yeah, so it's almost like we have to avoid this lore of like easy money and a quasi casino.
With the exchanges?
Yeah.
You just have to treat them as they are, you know? Just imagine that any money you send to them could always be lost at any moment, like 100% lost.
Yeah.
You know, like you could lose. It's not 100% chance you'll lose it, but if you do lose it, you'll probably lose all of it.
Yeah. So just be aware of it. You know, just be aware of it. That's
and we haven't had a major one in like a long time.
It's been a minute. It's been a minute.
Right? It's been a fucking long time. When was our last one? Was it Bifinex in 2016? Besides all the random Asian ones that I never heard of until I got hacked.
There was a Japanese exchange.
I think there's a Korean one too.
I think the last big one was definitely Bitfinex. It was like 116,000 or 120,000 Bitcoin. I don't like what the exchanges did there. I'm just going to make that known. I'm not a big fan of them agreeing to this checkpoint and instituting it and then claiming a winner so quickly, even though I don't care.
Yeah, I mean,
about Bitcoin Cash.
The best part about this is I think we have two takeaways here. We have Bitcoin Cash specifically is extremely centralized, and if you can have like one or two dedicated attackers cripple your chain, then like your threat model was like super naive to begin with, and you know you're not up to the task. It's just you need a censorship resistant money. You're not going to be able to even dream of standing up to nation states if you can't handle Craig Wright. And then the other thing is I think people need to put not all chains are equal. Just because it's hard to double spend attack on Bitcoin, you know, or do a reorg attack, a 51% attack on Bitcoin, doesn't mean all these other chains are equal. Like if your chain is just GPUs, like you're at risk. Like because only the most valuable chain, in this case Ethereum, for GPUs is actually secure, because all the other chains are just, you know, they're just sideshows. So at any point you could have a massive amount of GPU power, graphics power come onto your chain. And then the other one is if you're a minority chain with an ASICs on your algo, which is what Bitcoin Cash is, you're almost even more vulnerable, I think, probably than a GPU chain, because that hash power is way easier to mobilize. You know, with Bitcoin Cash, you only needed 6% to reorg their chain this whole fucking time. That's ridiculous. So, both investors and exchanges need to understand the risk that they're taking on when they use these even less secure chains.
Yeah. And as an exchange, like I wouldn't even want the headache of that. And so I think
that's what's crazy to me. You know, like why are you listing Zencash or whatever? Like, are you really getting that much volume from it? No.
Right.
Like it seems like it's over the long term. You're putting way more tail risk. You're putting way more risk there.
That's why we're fans of Cash App here. They make very sound risk assessments.
Bitcoin only.
Very sound risk assessment. If you were like, oh, Bitcoin Max wasn't only saying that.
Well, I'll tell you, it makes the interface like way more clear.
Right.
Like I was trying to walk someone through fucking Coinbase and Gemini's interface, and it was just like way difficult.
I haven't seen their interface
because there's just so many coins there now that on Coinbase at least that they make it like super difficult to actually just do your normal shit.
It's a shame. Enough about exchanges and Bitcoin Cash, though. Let's talk about exciting products in the space. Lolli. Lolli.com. LOLLI.com.
So I'm a little torn on this project.
Why?
So
explain it.
Yeah, why don't you... You explain it, and I'll tell you why I'm torn on it.
I'm pretty sure you just shop on Lolli, and they give you cashback rewards in Bitcoin.
Correct.
Basically.
But you're not shopping on Lolli. You install the Lolli extension, and when you go to participating retailers' websites, you basically get cashback. Yeah, cashback as Bitcoin to your extension wallet. It's basically all the retailers that aren't Amazon, right? So it's just like another attempt to drive traffic to non-Amazon retailers. The problem I have with it is, well, right now, you can withdraw your Bitcoin. They say that's coming soon. So you don't really own Bitcoin. At any point, you can then sell your earned Bitcoin for cash and get the cash. So that's a little bit annoying.
Doesn't seem like why I came to download the app. But we had, was it the founder of the app, Hop Intermenchies, over the weekend? So
yeah, he said he's going to do it. He's going to do that soon. That's not really my issue. They'll do that soon. They'll let you withdraw. If you use the app, you should definitely withdraw right away. I'll start with my positive. My positive is I think it's a really easy way for people to get their hands on Bitcoin for the first time. I also think that it's a great way for us to help end this bear market, because if we all shop way too much, probably. So, you know, if you go and you buy a great duffel bag like Baboon to the Moon,
use the code Crypt, 10% off.
You can get Bitcoin back, and they're basically what the retailers are market buying Bitcoin for you with the cash back and giving it to you. So it gives a little bit of buy pressure every time
I like this.
You go to one of these websites. So that's really fucking cool. Now, my issue is the business model is literally they're tracking you and they're paying you for it. So like at least you get paid, but like I would never install this extension.
No.
No, because I'm like too much of a, like I'd rather keep my privacy than get the Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's
what it is. They're literally buying your privacy.
And how much? Yeah, I mean, you'd have to do a lot of shopping.
Now he was called out about this on Twitter, and he said all the right things. You know, it's generalized, anonymized data. They like take data security like seriously, but like their terms of service have some questionable stuff. It literally is their business model, so. You know, be aware.
Just be aware.
Just use it in a different browser, maybe. I mean, but still then they know all your purchases. But it's pretty cool. You get Bitcoin as cash back.
Yeah, it's cool seeing Bitcoin getting...
It's worth mentioning.
Getting more into the minds of like retailers and stuff like that. It's interesting. Lolli.com, free ad. Noddle.it, what is this? I haven't even looked at it.
So now we're back to the sexy world of hardware nodes. We first covered Casa HODL. Then we covered CoinMine, which we told you not to get, but they had the similar idea as Casa HODL, but they put a miner in, right? Now, this one is more cypherpunk than all the others.
Okay.
Monetary
liberty in your palm. Bitcoin full node, Lightning node, BTC pay server, plug-and-play financial self-sovereignty.
It's a souped-up Casa HODL node.
Mm-hmm.
The specs are a little bit nicer. I like that it has an SSD instead of a hard drive. You get like way better performance. They don't pre-sync the chain for you. So it reduces trust a little bit. And they plan on making it... Oh, and it runs BTC Pay Server,
mm-hmm.
which is a big thing out of the box. And you can... The dream is that you can run a bunch of different things on it. You know, as they continue to develop it, you'll be able to, you know, it's a node in the box for everything, not just necessarily Bitcoin specific things.
It's pretty dope.
Yeah, I mean, I like this idea that you have like a little box at home that runs all the things that we've recently thought we should run in the cloud, and you run it at home instead, and you're connecting back to your hub.
Yeah. No, I like that idea a lot, like similar to what Trezor does, where you just interact with your device locally. You're not sending calls to the cloud, which is a huge security breach, or leaves you vulnerable to security breaches. So yeah, cool to
yeah,
see.
Yeah, so it has a little bit, it's souped up, its processor's a little bit souped up. It's got that SSD in there instead, and the BTC pay server. And then I think they also have a cloud version where they run it on a server for you instead.
Yeah, so check it out, nodl.it, nodl.it. Cool to see these products getting built out, and the shit gets built in the bear market. Like, price is bad, and a big dump this week, but I think we were discussing this earlier, like 2015, people legitimately thought it was going to zero. And at the same time, in the last bear market, we had the XT attack where we were fighting internally as Bitcoiners.
The whole block size debate and everything. Yeah. Like now, like at least we won't like try and slit each other's throats for like another year and a half.
Hopefully.
Probably. Yeah, I mean, and maybe like Schnorr or something.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. We'll get to that. But yeah. Since
we got rid of a lot of the bad actors because they went to the forks and the altcoins.
Right.
Which is fantastic.
Some are trying to crawl back, I believe.
You know, Bitcoin's permissionless. They can.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean we'll forgive them. And that's all right.
People don't forget. SIM swapping back in the news. It's increasing.
I listened to this great pod that we're going to plug in the show notes.
What's that?
I put the link there. It's Reply All. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of Reply All?
I've heard of it, yes.
I've never listened to it before. One of my buddies sent it to me because it's related to Bitcoin and like this actual episode is. So basically...
Is it about SIM swapping in particular?
Well, kind of. So some girl lost her Snapchat account. At Lizard for Snapchat, and that's like it's like original name. It's like one of the OG names.
Mm-hmm.
So it's worth a lot of money. So she got it hacked, and then this reporter who does this podcast started looking into it for her, and he originally thought it was SIM swapping, and his investigation like gets into the Discord group of like all these teenage and like 20-year-old like hackers who are SIM swapping people and password cracking people. And he gets to a point where he like gets paranoid about it. So like he investigates himself and realizes like it's super easy for him to get doxxed. So he starts trying to like harden all of his stuff. So it's like a fun way of like learning about, you know, how you need to be aware of SIM swapping and password protections and stuff. Yeah, he actually got the guys who... So the guys hacked her Snapchat account. It turns out that they didn't even need a SIM swapper because she didn't have two-factor set up and she was using like top 500 password or something. So they just cracked her password. but then once they cracked her password, they like threatened her. They said they were going to release her nudes. Like if she tried to take the account back, it turned out she didn't even have any nudes on Snapchat, but she wasn't sure like if she saved one of her nudes. So she's still like... Damn. Took it at face value, but they sell it on this site called OGUsernames.com or OGNames.com, and it's all Bitcoin. They sell the accounts for like $1,500, $2,000 for Bitcoin, and that's how these kids make money. And then they buy like Prada shoes and stuff, and they brag about it in their Discord channel.
That's kids these days, man. Vicious.
But I guess we should tell people what SIM swapping is just to make sure.
Yeah, well, it's on the... Well, that's why I got confused. I didn't realize you're going to jump into a rehash of that podcast. But with SIM swapping in the back channels, people I've been talking to has been on the rise again. And SIM swapping, for you freaks that don't know, is the practice where somebody will figure out your phone number. It'll be associated with your Gmail or your exchange account. And they'll basically go into whatever your provider is, whether it be Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, pretend to be you and get a new phone and a new SIM card.
Yeah, they can just call up even and just get it switched.
Yeah, get it switched so they then have control of your phone number and can get like your 2FA and reset password sent to you.
Sent to them. And then they get into your account and then
they just drain
everything.
All your Bitcoin. Yeah. So it's a very prevalent problem with Bitcoiners and crypto enthusiasts in general. And the carriers there's faults on both sides. Like everybody needs to take care of their personal OPSEC, but then the carriers, I think they need to step up their game a little bit.
Well, the problem is like the phone number is treated as like an authentication token, mm-hmm. and it's not secure at all.
Right.
So with Bitcoin, they have like an easy way to monetize a SIM swap because if they can get into your Coinbase account or something with your phone number, then it's super easy. Then they take your money, and that's like they make money off of SIM swapping. But that's what I found interesting about this OG names thing, because you never think about that, you know? So that's another super profitable thing that's really easy to target people because you just look for the OG names. They're all public, right? Like at fuck on Instagram, this guy had stolen.
Really?
Yeah, he had like all the big ones, at loser on Twitter. But like, so these names are worth, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, and same with your Bitcoin. So the way you protect against this is, it's not possible for people not to know your phone number. So I think that that's what like Lop will tell you, you know, like don't make sure no one gets your phone number. But I just assume that people are going to be able to get my phone number. You should get a Google Voice number, which is a free number from Google that can't be ported. It's tied to your Google account. Your Google account should not have a phone recovery attached to it. You should be using two-factor, but app-based two-factor, not text-based two-factor everywhere.
Yeah, and ideally get like a designated hardware device for two-factor.
Like a YubiKey.
Yes.
But the phone-based, the app ones are like...
Google Authenticator.
For all 99% purposes, Google Authenticator will... protect you in these scenarios. So the key is you have to make sure that even if you have the app-based, like on Google, for instance, on your Google account, you can set up app-based two-factor, but it doesn't automatically remove the phone number you originally put in as a password recovery option. So you have to go back and delete
manually
it.
Do it. Yeah. And then on top of this, when you do download the Google Authenticator app, make sure you write down the extra keys that they have to give you access in case you lose your phone.
Yeah, your backup keys. You need the back.
Write those down and do not lose those.
Well, so if you have, it changes your threat model a little bit, but I think it's worth it. If you have Android phone, I'm not sure if it's on iPhone, but there's an app called Authenticator Plus, mm-hmm. and it works on the same system that Google Authenticator works on, but it saves a copy of all your backup codes. It saves a copy of all your codes to Google Drive encrypted. So then you can put in like a super complicated password there. And then as long as you keep that password, if you lose your phone or something, you can then restore all your codes, which is really convenient.
Yes.
And like, so that makes you like a little bit weaker to like, maybe like, let's say like a state actor or something, but it makes you, it's just way easier if your phone falls in a lake. I don't know.
Yeah. Cause that's a fucking headache. It's a headache.
Especially if you have like 20 different sites using it, exactly. And you have to put in keep and manage the backup codes of each one like this, that makes it way easier, I think.
Yeah. So yeah, use 2FA and then use 2FA correctly. Make sure you're checking all these boxes on the back end and make sure you don't get screwed if you lose your phone.
It's crazy. You have to really go through them. So another way to check is if you go to a website and click forgot password and try and get into your account with only the phone number. So if you can get, like, pretend like you just hacked your phone number. So now the hacker has a phone. And then try and only get into the account with the phone number, you know, play around with and click the way that they would be clicking.
Think like a hacker would. Yeah. Get into the mind.
And then if you have to, use that Google Voice number or a burner phone. If like some services, which is annoying as fuck, like Twitter, for instance.
Refuses to use 2FA.
Well, no. So you can use 2FA now, but first you have to put in a phone number, and then they give you the option to switch to app-based 2FA.
Yeah.
But if you delete the phone number, it makes it way more likely for them to close your account or lock your account or something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Bad OPSEC, Twitter. Come on.
So then you use a Google Voice number or use a burner phone number.
Yeah. So yeah, these are on the rise. Be careful. One thing you can do, but it seems to be to have been in vain up to this point, is call your carrier and say, hey, if somebody's trying to...
No, that doesn't do anything.
Yeah, well...
That's what Selkis did.
Yeah. Ryan Selkis...
twice. He got hit twice.
He's been sim swapped twice. I believe they got his wife recently, which sucks.
Yeah, and they got their internet at their home they turned off while they did it, so that it'd be less likely for them to respond. His building has, like, a cafe study area where there's building Wi-Fi. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been able to, like, sign in and close all his accounts because they, like, cut his internet at his house.
The lengths through which these people go. It's scary, but you freaks need to know that these threats exist and they're out there. Shout out to Ryan Selkis. Sorry you had to go through that shit. It sucks. That's all I got on the docket. What do you got?
The other good thing is, like, unique emails. If you use unique emails,
yeah,
for different services, you can make, like, free email accounts on Tuta or Proton Mail.
What? Yeah, that's important too. Use a VPN, blah blah blah, the whole spiel.
Yeah, but some sites, if you use a VPN, then they block your account.
Yeah,
just a little bit.
YouTube will do that.
Because they think you're getting around geographic restrictions, or like my brokerage account thought I was like a hacker from Singapore, but I was just VPN'd.
Nice. That's all I got for this week. Anything?
What's our time? What's our time on the thing?
We're at 56 and a half minutes right now.
We hit the list, right?
Hit the list.
I mean, it was like 5 days. So we're going to come back on Wednesday of next week. Mm-hmm. Have a great Thanksgiving, guys.
Enjoy Thanksgiving if you're here in the States. If you're not in the States, enjoy your week.
You know, this is... It's like real Bitcoin again, because... Like, you don't know what the price is going to be when we come back.
Right?
You know?
Exactly.
We could be anywhere.
We could be. It'll be interesting to see where we are. But again, like we said in the beginning of the episode, this is... it's just part of the process. It's part of the cleansing period of the last mania of last year. We'll see how low it goes. We know our buddy Murad is very happy right now.
He's so annoying.
We'll have an update with him in January.
You know the bottom won't be in until Murad doubles down on his short right next to it.
Yeah, we'll catch up with Murad the night where we have her steak dinner.
It's going to be so much more expensive now for me.
We'll record and then we'll go eat.
There's still time. We can recover.
Yeah. We'll see.
No, there's no way. I definitely lost this bet. There's like no way.
Keep telling yourself that.
There's no way it'll recover that quickly.
We shall see.
At least I get to have a good steak dinner with some good dudes, have some good conversation.
Hey, that's what life's all about. The connections you make along the way. I hope you freaks are making good connections out there. I hope you enjoy the show. If you did, please subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate, review, share. Get the word out there.
Like, before you press enter on Twitter, like, just, I don't know, just take a deep breath and, like, think a couple seconds, you know, before you're, like, a complete dick to some random stranger on the internet. Like, everyone's being really salty right now.
Yeah.
A lot of us have lost a lot of money, and, you know, some more than others, and just, you know, the time to be, like, absolute dickwads to each other is like during the bull market. You know, that's like the best time to do it, because you know you're not kicking them when they're down, and just ignore the noise and just focus on the good shit. Just be grateful
for life, and that we're here right now. Enjoy your weekends, freaks. Peace and love.
Enjoy your weekends. It's a Monday.
It feels like the weekend already.
Okay, take care, freaks.